Endless Hustle is presented by Eat Clean Bro, a convenient solution to bring you the highest quality chef-prepared meals delivered right to your door. Eat Clean Bro is the contract-free solution for your meal prep needs. Made with all-natural ingredients and next-day delivery, every meal feels like you have someone cooking for you right at home.
I fought a good fight. I finished my football race. And after 18 years, it's time.
Basketball players, we're really supposed to shut up and dribble, but I'm glad we do a little bit more than that.
Eventually, every ball would go flat, but that doesn't mean that your life will flatline. What will you do when the game is over?
Hello, Endless Hustlers. Episode 101 of Bro Bible's Endless Hustle. I am, as always, your host, Arthur Cade. We have an unbelievable triple header ahead. First up, we have the WWE champion. And shall I now call him a friend of the show? Because he was just on like a month and a half ago. We gave him the Endless Hustle bump. Big E is now WWE champion. It's all because of us. Now, of course, I'm kidding. It's all because of him. We like to think, or I'd like to think, that I had like a 0.00002% chance of helping him. Let me just have that glory. But congratulations to my buddy Big E, WWE champion since I last saw him. And he's got an incredible new movie out on Netflix called Escape the Undertaker. It is unbelievable. I don't want to spoil how this is, but it's essentially like a live action movie on Netflix. He explains it all, that people can essentially choose what him and his tag team mates, the New Day, the legendary tag team, what they do during the movie. It's fucking awesome. So you guys got to check it out. Our next guests are husband and wife and two of the biggest current names in wrestling, Cody and Brandi Rhodes from All Elite Wrestling. They have an awesome new show out on TNT called Roads to the Top. We're getting a look inside their just bonkers life of raising a family, being wrestling superstars, being entrepreneurs. Brandy's the chief branding officer for AEW. And listen, unless you've been living under a rock, AEW's taken over the world. So just to be able to have these two on the show was awesome. We talked about everything. And then we're finalizing the episode. We're finishing up, last but not least, a guy who is one of the biggest shows and hosts on cable TV. He's Fox News host Jesse Watters. Fox News Channel is, of course, celebrating its 25th anniversary this month. And Jesse's become one of the most popular TV hosts on television. He's the co-host of Fox News Channel's The Five, which is weekdays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. And of course, host of Waters World, which airs Saturdays at 8 p.m. Eastern. I mean, he beat his mentor, Bill O'Reilly, in the New York Times bestseller list. His new book is called How I Saved the World. Jesse, of course, polarizing figure, Fox News in general, polarizing, but it was so cool because we didn't even touch politics. We just talked about the hustle, the endless hustle that it takes to make it. And of course, he's a Philly guy just like myself. And we talked about Philly sports. Really great chat. Regardless of what you think politically, I think you're going to really like this conversation. So let's kick this off. WWE champion Big E. All right, we've got a great day on the Endless Hustle, as I now can call him a friend of the show and a man who is a recipient of the Endless Hustle bump, because the last time I saw Big E, he was just the Money in the Bank champion. And guess what? He's now the WWE champion. Congratulations, Big E. Unbelievable, man.
Thank you very much, man. It's been quite the whirlwind, but it's been a lot of fun.
How exciting has this ride been? Obviously, when we saw you, I had a feeling you were on an upward trajectory, and I had a feeling that title shot was coming soon. But then you have the belt. The WWE literally changes their Twitter handle to you and is like, Big E is now WWE champion. I'm like, the organization loves this guy. Tell me about this ride right now.
No, it's been very, very cool, man. In many ways, I always harken back to my start, you know, which was 12 years ago. But I still see myself as a failed former football player who was just trying to find his way in this world. And to get to this point where, you know, so many of my peers have reached out and said so many kind things, so many fans have been so kind. So winning the WWE Championship obviously means a lot, but I think just the outpouring of love and admiration from everyone has helped make this even more special for me.
Yeah, that was the thing that really blew my mind. I was on Twitter And all of a sudden you're like trending number one or number two. And I'm like, why is Big E trending? And then I click on it. I'm like, holy cow, this guy actually won the championship. And I saw everything unfold. And I'm just like, good for him, man. So for you, at what point do you know you're going to be the champion? And the second half of my question is, you mentioned the outpouring, and I saw everybody jumping in on Twitter, your colleagues, fans. What was that experience like to see all of that support?
Well, you know, I didn't really know. I knew I was going to be at Raw on that Monday, but beyond that, I didn't really know until I got to the arena, and then it was clear that, all right, today is the day. But, you know, in our industry, because things are so chaotic, I always have the mindset that I never really believe it. I don't really buy anything until I'm actually there doing it, because things are always changing. It's always chaotic. But yeah, so it wasn't until then, that moment really just, you know, pretty much as everyone, you know, I was sitting in Gorilla right before I called my shot and said, tonight I'm cashing in. And yeah, then it happened. But man, I got back to the locker room right afterwards, and I had 144 missed texts. They kept pouring in. It took me about 3 days to finally get back to everyone with the DMs and everyone. And there were so many different DMs from people that, you know, were strangers that I just could not get to because they just kept coming and coming. But I tried to get back to everyone who at least had my phone number, texted me, or who called me. But I'm just very, very appreciative, because it feels like I'm on the right path. It feels like I've been doing the right thing, not only in the ring, but outside the ring as well, because it means a lot to me to have the respect of my peers and people I work with. And I'm glad that clearly I have been doing something all right.
That picture of you on the ropes holding the belt, in my mind, it was just such an iconic moment. Here you are again, everything you stand for, a minority, being able to be now a role model for so many young kids out there who will dare to dream. What was that moment like, holding that belt, being on those ropes? What's going through your head there?
Well, for me, you know, as we talked about before, kind of a big point of emphasis for me has just being, you know, with meditation is being present. That's big for me. So I just did my best to be in that moment, to not spend too much time, you know, worrying about anything, just to be really present in that moment. But it was really beautiful, man. I hope everyone, whether, you know, in your career, your hobby, whatever it is that you love, I hope everyone gets to have an opportunity like that, where they're at the top of whatever it is that they've worked so hard for, and to have that moment of just real, just pure joy, and having Kofi and Woods run down. And there was a beautiful shot that my buddy Andreas Hale actually sent to me, but there was a fan from on high that sent a video, and you can see Kofi and Woods coming out of the curtain, moving. They looked like they were Olympians as fast as they ran to the ring. But that's what really makes it feel extra special, is knowing that the people that you love, people that you've worked so hard with, you know, I was harking back to 2014 and our origins and how hard that was to get things off the ground. But it makes it feel worth it. Like all the times that we were told no and had doors slammed in our faces, and, you know, just all the times we were ridiculed and people laughed at the idea the three of you want to get together. And, you know, we did it. We did it. We got to do it our way. And that's what makes it really beautiful is, you know, I tell people, I don't ever want to be, as much respect as I have for John Cena, for Roman Reigns, for so many of these all-time greats, I don't want to be any of them. I want to be a one of one. I want to be myself. And I'm so grateful that I didn't have to shove myself into a mold to become WWE champion. I got to do it in a way that felt authentic to me. And that's what makes me extra proud.
You got a movie coming out. Congratulations on that. The Undertaker, one of the great icons. Tell me all about this movie. What can fans expect?
So it's a lot of fun, and it's supposed to be that. It's supposed to be light and fun, but it's also got some, you know, a little bit of scary elements as well. But the cool thing is, it's this choose your own adventure style. So our audience, people on Netflix, will get the opportunity to direct Kofi, myself, and Woods in whatever direction that they would like. So essentially, the premise is we roll up to this beautiful, gorgeous, kind of scary house, and it's the Undertaker's house. And we get into some kind of shenanigans, and obviously the Undertaker has all these powers. He is the Undertaker, so he's going to be himself, pretty much. He's going to be that character in this Netflix show, and we are ourselves as well. But we go through all kinds of twists and turns, and And it should be a fun one for sure. But that's the beautiful thing, is not just you're not passively sitting back and watching, but you're getting the opportunity to choose your own adventure. And I don't know about you, but I adored Choose Your Own Adventure books when I was a kid. It was the very best. You know, it's just, it's unique. It's fun. You feel like you have more agency in the direction of the story. So that's what this is. And it should be a lot of fun for wrestling fans and for people who just like a good, fun, horror type mystery.
So how's this going to work technology wise? Because I was trying to figure out, can people literally like type it in while the thing is happening? Is it something they pre-select? Do you have any idea, or are you as confused as me?
That is a great question. I wish I had answers for you. My assumption is you use your remote to make selections, but don't quote me because everything has not been detailed to me, but that, I think that's the general premise.
When you get to do a movie, I mean, you're technically now a movie star too. This has got to be such a cool experience to be part of this.
Yeah, yeah. We got to kind of head off to this remote, just really beautiful area. And, you know, it was kind of off the beaten path, didn't really have cell service. But just getting to hang out with Cove Woods and The Undertaker is pretty crazy. But we had a good time dressing up, having some fun. I got to have a glass box full of actual tarantulas on my head at one point. So that's something to look forward to.
The Undertaker, what does he mean to all of you guys and girls who, no matter what age, are wrestlers or wrestling fans? What does that dude mean to all of you?
Well, I mean, he's a legend, and I don't want to age him, but I remember watching him when I was a little kid, when I was very, very small. And the fact that he's still around, still doing things with WWE is incredible. But, you know, you could argue he might be the greatest character in all of wrestling history. He, you know, he's had these just absolutely iconic matches with Shawn Michaels. The streak at WrestleMania has been incredible as well. So just the lore of The Undertaker is so massive. But you know, it's cool that you get an opportunity. You know, I remember years ago he came up to me and said, you know, I watched you before and I didn't know you had all that personality in you when I went from just being the silent bodyguard to the New Day. And the sweetest thing is his daughters, every now and then his wife, Michelle McCool, when she would be on the road, would send us pictures or whatnot, but his daughters would do often, they loved us, and they would do like unicorn themed parties or whatever it was. But just hearing that, you know, the fact that The Undertaker even knows who we are is pretty cool. But the fact that his daughters and his family are fans of our nonsense is especially cool.
I want to talk to you about the relationship with the guys in the New Day and just the brotherhood you guys have built, because you obviously talked about just the way they congratulated you. Is it that type of relationship that even though you had won, they won with you? Is it like a true brotherhood both in and out of the ring?
Precisely. And it can sound cliche, it can sound done to death, but it's very genuine. And I'm so extremely thankful for it. You know, we, even when we were on separate shows, we text each other all the time, we talk all the time. You know, when I had my meniscus surgery, which for me, I've had many surgeries with all my time in sports, but this one was fairly minor. But they even took the time, they would FaceTime me to just make sure I still felt included and be a part of the group. And man, those guys, they're just such incredible human beings, and they really feel like family. And I love that for us, you know, that there's no element of jealousy or us, you know, side-eyeing the other when we have our accomplishments. We all genuinely want the best for each other. And I always said my perspective too is everything that I do in my career, I feel like I'm still contributing to the New Day names. So I liken it to a caveman, and I go out in the day and I get I hunt and I gather and I bring the food back. But at the end of the day, I'm still bringing it back to the New Day cave. It's still not just for me. So I'm proud to add another accomplishment to our resume, to our collective, because I clearly do not get here without those guys. And it means the world to me to be able to continue to add, to continue to do work that contributes to what we've done as a trio.
So you and I have something in common. We're both massive UFC and MMA fans. Where did your love of UFC begin?
So I remember kind of my earlier memories are watching the Ultimate Fighter in college. That was just, you know, we're all like, especially at that time, 18 to 20-ish in the dorms, just, you know, just young, warm-blooded American males who love to see guys punch each other in the face. How could you not be into that? So I started watching then, but I kind of fell off a little bit after college. But honestly, what really brought me back in was UFC 2, the video game. So we started, it became a huge thing in our locker room. Woods was doing a great job of just getting video games rolling in our locker rooms. And we would just play on live events, on TV days. And it was just a great way to bring everyone together. But UFC 2 came out years ago and we just absolutely, we played it all the time and I was hooked. And so playing the game all the time got me to get back into watching again. And the same thing, I got absolutely hooked. I would watch all the fight nights. I listened to like three or four different MMA podcasts. Morning Combat is one I absolutely adore. I watch everything those guys put out. So it just like, as soon as I got into that video game a few years ago, I jumped completely all the way in. I love the sport. I'll even take the time to listen to fighter interviews, whatnot, listen to podcasts. But I just have so much respect for the men and women who put their bodies on the line to do what they do.
I'm always watching Fight Pass. I mean, I absolutely... I'm on top of that sport and I've become such a rabid fan and I'm watching it or listening to it just like you, wherever I can. Who are some of your favorite fighters? Have you gotten to meet any of them? Have there been any shout outs? Who would you love to meet?
Yes. So we actually did a Fortnite Pro-Am a few years ago in LA, me, Woods, Cove. And so we actually, I saw Sean O'Malley. I just had like a very brief interaction with. But Demetrius Johnson and Tyron Woodley were two that I got to talk to a little bit more. And man, they're so down to earth. We actually spent probably, they had to put us on a shuttle and there might've only been like six of us on the shuttle. And it was Tyron Woodley, who was still a welterweight champion at the time, and just us. And like, just to be able to pick his brain, hear his stories, kind of talk about like where he wanted to go with his career ambitions was just insanely cool to me. So hats off to T Wood, man, just ton of respect for him. As far as my favorite fighters now, man, Israel Adesanya is up there. There are so many. Max Holloway. So I got to play UFC in Hawaii with Max Holloway on Woods' Gaming Channel years ago. We had a show in Hawaii and Max showed up with his son. And man, Max is the absolute man. Like, I completely understood right away why he is so beloved by fans, because he's such a cool, down-to-earth guy. I have no idea how he makes 145 pounds because he was roughly my height. And I don't understand it whatsoever. But man, what an incredibly likable dude. What an incredible fighter too. I don't know if you saw the fight with Calvin Kattar, the one that was on ABC. That was one of the most masterful performances I had ever seen. To see this man, and Calvin Kattar is an excellent fighter. We're talking about a top 10 fighter. To see Max take time to like talk to DC, to talk about being the best boxer in the UFC mid-fight while he's matrixing punches is incredible. Like, that to me was the epitome of someone in the zone, in that flow state. And I was just wildly impressed. So man, it's as you can tell, I love the sport. I love seeing what the fighters do. It is so cool. So I can go on and on about it. I love it.
Here you are, WWE champion, but if you had to convert your skill set into becoming a UFC fighter, how do you think you would do, and what type of respect do you have for them as athletes?
Ooh, so I would have some difficulty because I would be a heavyweight and I am not very tall. So you're talking about guys like Francis Ngannou, who are like 6'4", 6'5". Ciryl Gane, again, very tall and rangy, and dealing with that length is a problem. I will say, so I was a state champion wrestler in high school. Mind you, this was, what, 18 years ago. But I'd have to rely more on my wrestling base, so I definitely have to work on that. But, you know, more like a DC. DC's about my height. Another guy, a great guy that I met as well, he was at a show. He's a big wrestling fan too. Met him at the Staples Center years ago. But yeah, I think I would have to use my wrestling skill set to take guys down, and you know, height is not an issue when they're on the canvas with you. But yeah, that's what I'd have to do.
Who do you think from UFC would actually have a chance in the WWE ring? Who could kind of hold their own, you think?
Ooh, well, I think a huge part of obviously what we do is bringing that entertainment factor of being a personality. I love Israel Adesanya. I think he's a heck of an entertainer. So he's a very natural fit. You think of guys too, man, who else I think would do really well? I think Max Holloway is another guy who would do well in the UFC. In WWE. I'm trying to think of anyone else.
I feel like Connor. I mean, Connor.
Oh, no brainer. Yeah.
Connor is just a guy. I feel like you could throw Connor in any sport and his personality. Because I had Dana on the show not too long ago and talking about the magnetism that just oozes off of Connor. That guy, no matter what he would have done, if he would have put his mind to it, he's going to be a superstar.
Oh, completely. And I skipped past Connor because he's such an obvious no-brainer. It's like, all right, like, everyone knows Connor. But yes, personality-wise too, clearly. And he's mentioned us as well. He's mentioned WWE. So I'm sure at some point he'll probably end up doing something with us.
Who would you invite? If you had one dream guest from the UFC to invite to your next title defense, who would you invite? I'm so curious.
Ooh, let's go Francis Ngannou. I love what he's done lately. He's looked absolutely incredible. When we all saw him stuff that takedown from Stipe, take the back and land punches, I said, good luck trying to beat this man. But then watching Ciryl Gane perform, he's looked incredible too. So I think that's a massive fight. But let's go with Francis Ngannou. He just looks terrifying, man. There's just something about him. But he has such an incredible story as well. It's like out of a Disney movie. When you hear him talk about his past and growing up on the streets and not having much of anything, and to see him go from that, from being homeless, to moving to France and becoming the baddest man on the planet, what a story.
Yeah, I had Kamaru Usman on the show recently too, and another guy with a great story. And here's what strikes me about guys like you and guys like him. Here you guys are, you're larger than life, you're champions, you're at the top of what you do, of your vocation. And meanwhile, you're the nicest, most humble, like quiet. It's incredible to see the dichotomy between the characters and the animals that you can become in the ring or in the octagon versus the normal people you are in life. What's that switch? What's that switch when you turn it on? Like, how do you turn it on? When does it happen for you?
Oh, I guess it's just time and repetition. But for me, it's just very easy. And a lot of people who see it for the first time, especially like backstage, if I'm shooting something, will remark on how quickly I can turn it on and off. But I cannot live my life at that level of intensity and obnoxiousness. It is tiring. It takes something out of you. And I just truly adore performing. I love it. And it means so much to me. But yeah, you know, for me, I guess just over time, I was just able to develop this space. It's like a part of me that I can access whenever I need to. But ultimately, I'm very comfortable just being me. And that's another thing that I noticed too with fighters is I think a lot of times the guys who always chirp about how bad they are and how much they'll you know, whoop everyone's behinds. A lot of times in life, those guys are the guys who can't actually fight, but it's the guys who are the most humble, like you said, the most kind, because they have nothing to prove. They're just themselves. So I have so much respect. You know, anytime you see, especially guys with that cauliflower ear, when you see cauliflower ear and they're very nice, you make sure to be nice to that human being too, because you know they will do some things to you.
I was at MSG for SmackDown. The WWE kindly invited me. It was just an unbelievable experience. And to see the fan reception that you guys and girls all received was just incredible. What was it like for you? You're in the heart of New York. Trae Young comes out, which was awesome.
Yes.
What was that energy like in the building?
Oh, man, it's incredible. MSG has a lore. And it's a deserved lore. Doing the stuff with Trae Young was awesome. So we had an opportunity beforehand. For people who don't know, Trae Young was the one who actually took the Knicks out of the playoffs. Huge villain. In fact, I think some people threw things at him too. But we got a chance to talk to him beforehand. Such a good dude. He was so down to earth, so cool. But you could tell, man, I was just waiting for the moment because I knew he's coming out. So we're all out there and Sammy's doing out there cutting his promo. And I just couldn't wait for that moment where he says Trae Young, Trae comes out and just the boos, man. He had to be the most hated person in that arena. And he's another guy, I think, if he wanted to. He's such a natural, he's such a likable dude. But in that city, he really embraces being the heel. He embraces being the bad guy. And I love that. And I love being able to see people from so many different other avenues, whether it be sports or entertainment or whatnot. the times where, you know, you get to interact with them and see how they are. I love getting to see other people who excel at their craft and just kind of being able to be around them to see, you know, pick their brain, ask questions, whatnot. So it was just really cool to meet Trey and a real good dude.
I interviewed Trey in LA 2 years ago at the ESPYs. And what struck me, I played high school and college basketball myself, and I'm like 6'2", 185. But he wasn't bigger than me. And I was blown away because he's really slight. Obviously, when you see him in real life, he's actually bigger than what you would expect because all basketball players are. But when to see the comparison when he's standing next to all of you guys was hilarious because you could – when it's against an NBA guy, you can see the height difference, but sure. NBA players are for the most part pretty rail thin, except for the guys like LeBron and some others. But to see him next to you guys, you know, jacked up, it was hilarious because he looked like this little boy almost compared to you guys. It was great. But I love how he embraced the whole heel thing and he started just like the faces and they had him on the screen. It was fucking awesome. I loved it.
Yeah, no, he's great. And he, and I just said, and I didn't know he knew this, but I just said, man, go out there and have fun, do your thing. And clearly he needed no direction because he completely embraced it. But you're right, man. It's interesting to see so many, our bodies are so, the body types, especially within WWE, can be so different. But, you know, we don't play a sport where we have to run, you know, for two straight hours. So obviously that's why they're thinner. But man, it's always interesting meeting basketball players because you're right. Just you're looking up. But you're also they're also not the thickest, but nah, man. I've always had such positive experiences anytime we've done stuff with NBA people. We actually had Bobby Portis at a live event too, in Milwaukee, and obviously, you know, they just won a world title, so you know, he was beloved there, and that was really cool.
You're in Baltimore now, but what are some of your favorite cities? Like, what are some of? I know Baltimore is a great WWE city, but what are some of your favorite cities to perform in?
Number one, and I don't want to, this is not to diminish any other cities, but my favorite place to perform is Tokyo. I absolutely love Tokyo. I dream about living there for like a summer or something, just taking 3 months and living there at some point, which I'd love to do. But they just have such a massive respect for pro wrestling, for pro wrestlers. I'm also, selfishly, I love sushi. I can eat sushi all day, and that is obviously the mecca for sushi. But no, man, there's just something about the culture there. There's something about the way we're received. And thankfully, we always do two live events back to back. So typically when we're in Tokyo, you know, sometimes we'll do these international tours and you're barely in a town. Like we did Hawaii last time and we're in and out. But this time, when we do Tokyo, you're always there at least two nights, usually three nights, and you get time to explore. I absolutely love Tokyo. Man, if I had to pick other, there are so many cities that I truly enjoy, especially in the States. Being at Staples Center in LA is always big too. It's hard not, you know, being able to perform in Tampa. We got to be at Raymond James for WrestleMania. I played my high school football all-star game when I was 17 at Raymond James. So that's so cool to be able, you know, the stadium that the Bucks just won a Super Bowl in, the stadium that 18 years ago I played my high school game. I can go back and, you know, I still live here. I live in town in Tampa. So that always has a soft spot for me. But if I had to pick one city, it'd be Tokyo.
Speaking of Tampa, obviously with the Bucks playing now and Brady looks like better than ever, pretty much the guy's aging in reverse. What's the environment now, right now, with the Buccaneers?
It's title town right now here. Not just the Bucks, but to see the Lightning win two Stanley Cups back to back, the Rays get to the World Series. It's cool that there's so much excitement here because we have been used to very terrible sports teams for a very long time here. So it's nice, you know, especially during the pandemic that's been so hard for so many people. It's just nice to give the city, you know, something for us to all get together behind and for people to be excited by. And the Bucks are fun now. They're fun. And we have the GOAT in our city. It's incredible. Like, you know, in many ways, Tampa kind of feels like a mid-major. I think, you know, we're often kind of fighting for some semblance of respect. It's not a tiny town. It's not Green Bay, but we're not Miami. We're not New York. We're not LA. So it's cool that our city, our little city that could, is getting some positive attention in the sports world. So it's just been a fun ride.
My final question is, some little kid comes up to you and says, Big E, you're my idol. What do I have to do to become you? What would your one piece of advice be?
Oh man, that would be very humbling. I will say, you know, we all have different paths, and that's the biggest thing that I want to get across is like, I have a certain direction that worked for me, things that work for me. But you know, we all get here in a different way. But I will say, for anyone who wants to get into our industry or to do anything physical at a high level, show up in great shape, be humble enough to learn, but also be unafraid to be yourself. You know, so many times, especially in entertainment, people will try to put you in a certain box. They'll try to tell you who they think you are, but you have to have a good understanding of who you are deep down inside, what you want to portray on camera, how you want to be as a performer, and stick to that. But be open to you know, and I, you said one, and I'm going on, I'm giving you multiples.
No, this is great, man.
But no, I think that's really important. I think be unafraid to be unique, to be yourself, to draw from the things in your life that are real to you. I grew up in the church, and you know, you can kind of hear some of that in my delivery. You know, I was a preacher for a little bit as a kid. And so yeah, I'm just able to draw from my experiences, and I'm just so glad. That's one of the biggest reasons that this feels special to me, is because I didn't have to lose myself to become WWE champion, to get to the top of the industry. I didn't have to be a bad person. I didn't have to stab people in the back. I didn't have to change who I was. And I'm so grateful for that. So be unabashedly you, work your hardest, show up in shape, and give it your all. And enjoy the journey. Too many times we're just too oriented on the goal. And goals are great, and have goals. But enjoy the work. Enjoy the process. Enjoy that journey. Enjoy the day-to-day. And have fun. It's supposed to be fun.
You are the man. Congratulations, WWE champion. The new movie is called Escape the Undertaker on Netflix. Thank you for another awesome chat. So proud of you, man. And congratulations. I loved seeing when that Twitter handle changed, I was sending it to everybody. And I was like, yo, he was just on my show. Couldn't have happened to a nicer guy. So congrats, man. You're awesome, dude.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me again.
See you.
Yes, sir.
Peace. Bye-bye. All right, folks, that was, of course, my buddy and soon-to-be longtime friend of the show, hopefully, WWE Champion Big E. Make sure to check out Escape the Undertaker on Netflix. I mean, obviously, hearing him describe it was unbelievable. Like, it's so cool. And if you're a wrestling fan, or even if you're not a wrestling fan, it's definitely worth a look. Really cool movie. I checked it out. I loved it. Next up, they are the first family of All Elite Wrestling. Their new show is called Roads to the Top on TNT. Here is Cody and Brandi Rhodes. Cody and Brandi, congratulations. Brand new series. You've been dominating pretty much the whole network. The domination continues, so congratulations. Obviously, when we see wrestlers in the ring, we always forget that there are lives outside of the ring. So being able to really showcase how hard this all really is, how exciting is that?
Oh, I mean, I think that's something that people will look at the show and fall in love with, is it's really, it's kind of this unprecedented look behind the scenes in a wrestling company as it emerges. And not only that, but our lives as the past 3 years has been all AEW, all the Warner Media brand. And just to see that weigh on us, how it's weighed on us with the series and then everything that's happening in our personal life, it's really authentic. The thing I'm most proud of when I've seen the show is it's really authentic, and I hope people dig it.
I remember when AEW first started, and obviously the WWE's kind of had a stranglehold on the wrestling world. But right away, we could see that something was happening. But now to see the explosion, obviously you guys were kind of the first big faces and the lightning rod. But now CM Punk comes over, Daniel Bryan, now Bryan Danielson comes over. To see what's happening right now, the fan reception, how insane has this all been from the infantile stages of AEW to now?
What a crazy
been a journey.
Yeah, what a journey if you really think about the guinea pig process of it all in terms of when we started and being this challenger brand. And there was a lot of people on board when AEW and Dynamite was announced, and we had so much support, but there was also a great portion of the audience not wanting it to fail, but assuming it would, because so many wrestling projects have not been able to take off. And like you said, Brian Danielson, CM Punk, today we announced our partnership with the Owen Hart Foundation. Ah, it's going to just, the hits are just going to keep on coming. And it's because the company is made up of incredibly passionate people, starting at the top with Tony Khan and working its way down to through our roster, through everybody. AEW has really made it clear from when we started to now that it's a company you can look forward to sticking around. And that's something to really hang our hat on.
So Brandi, here's a $1 million question. What's it like being married to this guy?
Oh, I, you know, it's not a question that I get often. So I'm going to try to answer it accurately. It is always adventure mode, yes. Which is a good thing. Unless you hate adventure, if you're not into, you know, trying to just, you know, jump on that horse and ride it and see where it goes, then you might be in for a big shock. But I knew that when I was going down this road with him. And I'm an adventure person. I've always been the type of person who's been glass half full. And if there's an easy way to go or a harder route where it's a 50% outcome, I think I'll take the bet on the 50% because I think that I'm worth it. And I think the same thing with him. So, I mean, we've been on this crazy journey together for the longest time. I was the one person when he left the last company that said, this is the right thing. This is going to be okay. I believe in this. And look where we are today. You know, wild rides sometimes have great rewards. So
Cody, I want to talk to you about the Shaq experience. When I saw Shaq on AEW and you getting to wrestle with him, first of all, I've talked to a bunch of people about how hard when you're an amateur having to get in the ring and do what you guys do for a living is. I thought Shaq did pretty well. What were your thoughts?
I think he's up there as, if not the best celebrity involvement, he's definitely at the very top, which was a goal of his. Shaq took it very seriously. He trained multiple times. He asked a lot of questions. He very much committed to the idea. He wanted to do good by wrestling fans, which is hard to do. And the scary thing was right before the actual match, he's got Shaq Life on TNT as well, and they're filming him. And he's got so much going on, and all these people wanted to get pictures and that there was so little time to really have any type of discussions. So I feel like the first time I saw him on that day was when he comes out and hits the double bicep behind Jade. And I realized right then he's got it, because Shaq is just the type of red light personality that has that gene that he's got it. And I really look forward to Shaq returning when and if
he's still in that ambulance.
He's still in that ambulance, apparently. I haven't seen him. Yeah. He disappeared. One of the unsolved mysteries of Dynamite. But gosh, I'd like to be on his team this time, because he did right by wrestling historians and right by wrestlers, and just he did it right. So Shaq, top man.
Come back, Shaq.
Come back, Shaq. Yes.
By the way, I always tell people, until you've actually stood next to Shaq, you cannot truly grasp the enormity of how big he is. I've interviewed him throughout the years. I'm 6'2". And I stand next to him and I look like a little rag doll. When you actually saw him and then you're like, holy shit, I got to hit this guy. And like, what's your reaction when you actually, like, in real life have to do something with a man that size?
Getting in the ring when it's TV and it's live, I kind of have this like shark in the water type mentality where nothing phases me. And I feel really kind of bulletproof, but I will say, when he raised his hands to do the chops, I could see his hand like is basically swallowing out the biggest spotlight. It was like the sun disappeared behind this frying pan of a hand when he went to do the chops. And I can say he's the hardest chop I've ever got is not from another wrestler. It's from Shaq.
Brandy's like, thank God I didn't have to do anything with Shaq.
Well, on the flip side of everything, that would have been me instead of Red Velvet with Jade. And then, you know, seeing the outcome of that, I was kind of like, well, good thing it was Little Red.
Not me, Jade is sit this one strong. Out. I'm good.
Yeah. Jade's got her own level of strength. So,
yeah.
I want to talk to you guys about CM Punk, because that actually felt like a moment. It really felt like a turning moment, both for AEW, but also for wrestling. I mean, I always knew CM Punk was a big deal, and I interviewed him earlier this for a movie, but I didn't realize the type of true stranglehold he has on his fans and how much people really love him. He's almost like a cultural icon. So when he shows up at AEW to see the reception, you guys were like literally top 10 trending all at the same time. And I'm like, this is fucking nuts. What was the reaction inside of the company when that all was happening? Did it feel like a turning point for you guys as well?
I think everyone, because AEW is a wrestling company and really by wrestlers and wrestling fans, I think everyone was actually aware of how significant it was. I made multiple messages that day to different individuals, just how proud I was of various members of the roster and various members of management, because it was a flashpoint. It really is a flashpoint in wrestling. AEW starting is a wonderful moment. The MGM Grand, Double or Nothing, wonderful moment. The first Dynamite, wonderful moment. But you have to continue to make milestones for wrestling fans. You really do. It's about what you've done for me lately. The biggest milestone in wrestling is CM Punk returning after 7 years. And really, I can't speak for him personally, but having fallen out of love with wrestling, to fall back in love with wrestling and know that those fans, that's the thing I always admired about Punk and to a degree was angry about, was these guys were chanting your name for 7 years. The power of that, that's how loyal those fans were, as you mentioned, and to see them rewarded was touching. You know, they showed that guy crying in the crowd and people really like gravitated towards that. There was thousands, if not millions, of people crying at home or just crying inside, because to be able to see somebody come back and be loved and to be able to do it at the level he was doing it, as he's proved with Darby Allin. Yeah, I'm very happy that I was just present in all of it. You know, wrestlers all have egos, and you always don't try to put other things over as much. But then there are things that are just undeniable. That's an undeniable flashpoint in wrestling. And it's a great moment for the company, because everyone who had been pulling the wagon for 3 years, they can continue to pull the wagon, or they can take their hands off and have Punk get an opportunity at it, and he's doing a great job.
So one of the main reasons that I started the show was to talk to successful people from all worlds about the habits and the mentality that helps make them successful. So my question to you both is, what are the habits that you incorporate in both of your lives to continue to elevate?
I think for me, on the non-wrestling side and in the executive realm as chief brand officer, a big portion of my job is to put highlight on others in our partnerships and help elevate through AEW what their missions are, what they're doing, and important areas that we may not be paying attention to. So for instance, our partnership with Culture City is one of my favorite things that we do, because it put a highlight in not just the wrestling business of in entertainment in general, on people who do not have the same experience as us at live events and live shows and concerts and wrestling matches. So in doing that, that's what I look for in partnerships, specifically being able to take something that's kind of small and making a little bit of noise and make a lot of noise with it and try to make some sort of difference in our world that hopefully rubs up against other worlds.
I would say probably something to help others elevate and to hopefully elevate myself and all of that is, you have to, in my opinion, forego your expectations. And what I mean by that is people work really, really hard and then they'll expect something. And what I've noticed about my heroes and people who are at the top of their field is they're working harder and they're not expecting. It's that discouragement that comes from, if you say, hey, I ran 3 miles, why don't I look like The Rock? And then you're discouraged and you don't run the 3 miles again. So for me, I have learned every day in the wrestling business and now in this entertainment world, if you think you're working hard, there's somebody out there who's working harder than you. Don't waste your time telling everybody how hard you work. Don't waste your time logging it and expecting something. Believe me, it will come. But I feel like it only comes when you're, when you just forego those expectations and let them manifest naturally.
My final question is nutrition and fitness habits. How do you guys stay in the shape that you have to stay in while balancing both sides of the coin, parents in real life versus wrestling?
I guess on mine, maybe stay tuned. Nobody really knows what I look like at the moment. I had a baby very, very recently. I have been committed. I've been saying that I'm committed to health and fitness still, that I don't believe that that's something that's been personally very important to me my entire life. I was started figure skating at 4 years old. I've been an athlete my entire life. I've always said that I don't want something that's dear to me, like health and fitness, to slip in this current stage of my life. And I fully do plan on being a wrestler again. So I guess we'll see. When you see me again, yeah, you'll have to let me know if I'm doing okay.
When it comes to health and fitness, it's, for me, it's don't take shortcuts. Shortcuts will definitely prove results will come, but not long-term, especially when it comes to growth hormones or steroids or anything like that. If you're a male in the aesthetic-based industry, the number one most important thing is your heart and your organ function, and those shortcuts can really cost you later in time. I think health and fitness-wise, the number one thing I've learned is give yourself a light at the end of the tunnel. Work very, very hard to get to where you want, and then allow yourself some sort of freedom. You know, some people do that with a cheat day. Some people do that with a trip they take, something.
People go to Disney World and drink all day. I don't know who those people are.
We don't know.
People do that, I hear.
Might be us. Give yourself that light at the end of the tunnel, because that excitement on the way is a good excitement.
Guys, congratulations. The new show is called Roads to the Top. You guys were a pleasure to chat with. Thanks so much, Brandy and
Thank
Cody.
You very much.
Thank you.
See you guys. Have a good rest of the day.
Yes, okay, you too.
You too.
All right, folks. That was, of course, Cody and Brandy Rhodes. Make sure to check out Roads to the Top Saturdays on TNT. Our final guest, number one New York Times bestseller, host of Water's World, and of course, co-host of Fox News's The Five, and Fox News Channel celebrating its 25th anniversary. I'm talking to him all about it. Here he is, Jesse Waters. All right, we've got a great day on The Endless Hustle as I'm joined by one of the most popular personalities on cable TV. And here's the best plug of them all, number one New York Times bestseller, Jesse Waters. That's a pretty cool thing when you can say you're the number one New York Times bestseller. You beat Michael Pollan, you beat your former boss, Bill O'Reilly, you beat someone who I just had on the show recently, Danny Trejo. Pretty cool stuff, Jesse.
They'll never be able to take that away from me. And it was very sweet to be able to beat O'Reilly. And I'm going to taunt him for the rest of my life.
Is there a text as soon as the New York Times bestseller list comes out that week? Or are you like, Bill, check this out?
I warned him that I was going to knock him off the top slot. And I can't say he wasn't warned, but he'd been on the top for quite a while. So I think it was just my turn.
I mean, his response could be like, here's 15 books that I've written that have all hit number one. So go F yourself, Jesse.
I'm nowhere near as prolific a writer as he is, but it was nice to just get that number one slot.
So you and I were joking before we got started. We're both Philly guys. It's incredible to see your story. Obviously, you've risen to incredible heights with Fox News, but I want to start at the beginning. When you first joined the network, you're essentially, and you kind of joke around in your bio, a basement dweller. How does it all begin for you? Did you envision what's happened? And now that it has happened, pretty crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, I started in the basement, literally, at Fox, making minimum wage, no health insurance, freelance. And my job was to take a tape, take a Sharpie, label the tape, and then hand it to somebody else. So it was like arts and crafts. I had a bachelor's in history and I was doing arts and crafts. And I found out there was an opening on The Factor. So I had to get an interview. I go up there and do an interview, and Bill looks at my resume. And then he says, "What's your father do?" And I told him what my dad did. I think he thought I had some rich dad that was trying to slip me into Fox. That wasn't the case. And then I think he forgot I was in the room, and it got really silent. And then I said, "Bill, I just read your latest book. It was amazing." And all of a sudden his head perks up and he says, "You seem like a smart kid. You start Monday." But the minute he hired me, he almost fired me the next week, because we had these pitch meetings where every producer lines up in a circle in front of the entire newsroom and pitches stories we think would make good news. And Bill would just swat these pitches down, and it was brutal. And, you know, "You're trying to ruin the franchise. This is terrible. Next, no." And I get up to pitch my first meeting, and Bill says, "Interns don't pitch. Next." And the executive producer said, "Bill, you just hired this guy. He's your new production assistant." And he says, "Okay, what do you got? Go." And I pitch and I bomb. And that afternoon, my producer brings me up to his office and he says, "Jesse, Bill doesn't think you're articulate enough to make it in television. You have 2 weeks to turn it around or you're fired." So I stared into the abyss and was almost fired. And luckily I turned it around, and now I guess here I am, America.
The best part of that story is Bill had literally just hired you and didn't even remember that he had just hired you.
That shows you how low I was on the totem pole.
Fucking love it. That's amazing. So you start kind of making your way, and obviously Bill had a monster, a behemoth of a show. Were there moments at any point where you're like, "This isn't going to happen for me. I'm essentially going to just either be a PA or end up somewhere else"?
I never thought I was going to be a PA for life. I was always ambitious and wanted to keep getting more salary, more titles. I just wanted to keep going and going and going because I was very driven. And I think I just drove everybody crazy, because eventually O'Reilly was like, "Just get out of the office." He goes, "Jesse, you're bothering everybody in the office, so we're going to send you out to the streets to bother everybody else." So he basically sent me out to confront these bad judges, and he was giving soft sentences to these child predators. So I'd run up to people with a mic and confront them. And people really don't do that type of journalism anymore, that confrontational journalism. So I jump out of the bushes and confront people for being bad people. And that would shame them into doing the right thing. Shame is a big motivator in this country. And then eventually Bill said, "All right, we're going to find out how much young people know about what's going on." And Arthur, it turns out they know very little. And I would go out and I would ask basic questions about civics, like, "How many original colonies were there?" 100, right? "Where did Columbus first land?" Los Angeles, you know, basic stuff that everybody's supposed to know, but they don't. And that became very entertaining and turned into Waters World, and then ended up getting a weekend show because of that, and eventually on The Five.
Yeah, it's incredible, because Kimmel does something very similar. And when you see the lack of knowledge, whether it's entertainment-based, history-based, politically-based, it's incredible to see how not in touch general society is. And you're just like, you almost forget, because we live this every day, right, that we're consuming this. But most people out there are just involved in their daily lives. And like you said, don't realize there were 13 colonies. And they're just like, they don't even know we had colonies. It's incredible.
Right. And I don't like to call them stupid. I call them oblivious, just because they're not paying attention. And I'm such a nice guy. I'm not mean, as you know, Arthur. But it's funny because it makes a mockery out of our whole system. But it's also sad, because if the whole country's not paying attention, then the politicians and the corporate executives, they can just bamboozle everybody. "Hey, look over here. Hey, watch Netflix. Hey, you know, watch this shiny object." Meanwhile, you know, it's open season on the rest of the country. Everybody's getting rich. Everyone's lying and stealing, and no one's paying attention to what the people in power are doing. And everybody else is getting ripped off while they're just, you know, zoned out on their phone. And that's what I try to get out in the book, how I save the world.
So you're a kid who went to Penn Charter. You're growing up in Philly. You don't even go to really school for this. At what point during that period did you decide that you wanted to move into news and media?
I liked politics from maybe in high school. I was patriotic. I didn't really even understand the right-left thing. I kind of got into the right thing in college when I listened to Limbaugh once, and then that was it. And then I liked being conservative because my mother and father were liberal. So I was kind of rebelling against them and making them crazy. I figured if I could listen to Limbaugh and it would drive my mother crazy, that was good. And it would literally drive her crazy. I would put it on in the car, Arthur, and she would get road rage. She almost rear-ended a semi-truck during a welfare reform monologue. And I thought, well, I must be onto something. And then, you know, I think I wanted to be in TV because I like watching TV. That was as basic as it was. But I never envisioned a career on camera until I was sent out and given a microphone. And then the rest is history.
It's incredible to see, obviously, the political divide now, and people have stopped being friends with each other. The discourse has ended over politics. How has that relationship with your parents changed? Because obviously seeing a further separation, is it something you guys get over, or is it, hey, when we're Thanksgiving, let's not talk politics?
I have learned not to talk politics, especially at Thanksgiving, because after a few drinks, my liberal mom will fly off the handle. It got really testy under Trump, as you could attest to, as the country can attest to. There was a lot of conflict and a lot of emotion. And I cleared out the Thanksgiving table one time, just me and my pumpkin pie and a cocktail, and that was it. And I learned not to do that because you don't need to do that. I get paid to debate. I'm not getting paid to debate my mom. So we're gonna just leave that away from the table. And we've now come to a better place after Trump's not in office. Maybe, in my opinion, that could be one of the good things of Trump not being in the White House. My mom and I are getting along a lot more. Not that we didn't, but she was always bringing up this or that. She just doesn't bring it up as much anymore.
Instead of having to pay for therapy, the change in presidents has helped your family dynamic shift again.
Yeah. She doesn't have Trump derangement syndrome anymore. And that's good for the whole family.
Obviously, in this industry, having a mentor is incredibly just vital. You and Bill had a very tight relationship. What was that mentorship like? What was that relationship like? And how did it help really mold you into essentially what you've become, which is a success?
It wasn't a warm and fuzzy mentorship. I don't even think I'd use the phrase mentorship because that sounds a little soft for O'Reilly, but he didn't really tell me much. He would give me kind of one word, one sentence piece of advice. You know, Waters, when you go out there, you know, act like you're just curious. And then I would go out there and I'd have to figure it out by myself. Or he'd give me one question to ask and I'd have to fill in the rest. But I don't think he would consider himself a mentor. Bill did his thing. I learned as much as I could just by being around him. And it was a very great learning experience for me. And it's something I'm very grateful for.
What were some of the learnings? Because again, whether you agree or disagree, the power and the popularity of O'Reilly was undeniable. To have the track record and to see what he was able to produce with that show, the viewership, it was off the charts. And I don't know that it might even not be, I don't know that that longevity can be duplicated in today's day and age. So what were some of the biggest learnings that you really acclimated to and that helped you with your own career?
He was a journalist before he was an opinion commentator. He came up at ABC and CBS and was always very fair. during the presentation of the show, he was always trying to base his opinions on fact. And that's what I try to do. I try to have facts and then base my opinion off there. I don't just kind of like tee off on things just because I feel that way. I try to base it in reality. And he was fair to his guests. He didn't come on and just slit their throats. Gave him a chance to talk. Once he heard what they had to say, then he could go in and hammer him. But he was fair. And in cable, that's tough because you're under, you know, maybe 4 minutes to have a segment with someone. You got to be quick with the conversation. And you also have to be fair. So those two things were something that he taught me. And that's something that I try to do, be fair and be fact-based.
So obviously, when you started doing Waters World and the Man on the Street segments, that's a whole different art form. But now you had to essentially train yourself to become an in-studio host. What was that transition like when you started moving away from the Waters World stuff and now transitioning into the shows that you're hosting now? What type of evolution needed to occur?
That's a good question. And no one's ever asked me that question. So I'm just going to wing this answer. And I was very alert to using my words judiciously, because when you're doing a live ambush or when you're out on the streets, especially talking to people, you in an ambush, you can't edit. You can't take two. You get one shot. So when you jump out at someone in the driveway or in a public square, you can't stutter. You can't slow down. You really have to nail it on the first take. So doing hosting, I tried to be very quick and precise with my language. And that was something that I learned. And I try to just be honest. And that transition, I don't think I paid that much attention during that time and gave it a lot of thought about how do I transition from on the street reporter to an in-studio host. It was all happening so fast. I just did it. And looking back, I don't even remember what was going through my head at the time. I was just working really hard and trying to figure it out as I went.
See, I would feel like I'd be in the mirror, literally listening to my own voice and being like, let me get more broadcastery right now. And just like, just fucking around with it and having fun with it.
Yeah, sometimes I thought my voice sounded too high. And then I tried to lower my register. And I don't know if that came off natural. You just build confidence as you go and things happen and you get better by experience. And that's what happened with me.
So with the popularity of the network, once you start doing Waters World and some of these segments are going viral, you're now going to be recognized, especially in New York. What was that experience like for you when you're walking the streets and now people actually know who you are? Some may want pictures, some may have something negative to say. How are you beginning to process, for lack of a better word, fame?
So I'd say 80 to 90% of it's very positive. People want photos. They want to shake your hand. They come up, Jesse, congrats. You're doing a great job. Keep up the good work. Don't stop fighting. And then you get wing nuts that will call you a Nazi or they'll call you racist and they'll scream at you. Even in front of my kids, I walk around sometimes and people will say, you know, F you in front of my children. And they're unhinged radicals that can't control themselves. It's a behavioral or a psychological issue that they have. And that you comes with the territory. I just try to smile or ignore it or laugh it off. What you can't do is you can't engage with these people. Even if it's coming from the right, you know, if you're someone that's, it doesn't even matter about politics. When you haters approach you and you're at a certain level, I just remembered one time I reacted badly. And one of the people here at Fox said, Jesse, handle it the way Johnny Carson would handle it. Would Johnny Carson start foaming at the mouth and slapping people around? No, you handle it with class. You just kind of keep your head straight. You ignore it, you walk away and you get out of there. And that's what I try to do.
Were you shell-shocked in the beginning in terms of even just being recognized? Because you essentially went from a producer to now people know who you are. Was it shocking to be like, wait, did you just say Jesse? Oh shit, that's me.
No, because it happened over the course of time. It happened you know, I was doing ambushes, and then I was doing Man on the Street, and I was doing it once a week, then I was doing it twice a week, and then the weekend show, and then the five. So it was a slow build, and it wasn't like it happened overnight.
So I saw this great picture on your social media of you and Mike Tyson at a UFC event, and I'm a monster UFC fan. And I saw you actually responded saying you love the UFC. So I want to talk to you about first your love of MMA. How did you become an MMA fan, a UFC fan? Tell me everything.
I liked it back in the beginning. I used to buy the DVDs, UFC's Greatest Knockouts, when it was kind of crazy. They used to put 300-pound guys in with, short, skinny guys, and it was unfair, and it was rowdy, and it was the Wild West. I don't even think they were sanctioned to fight in certain states. It was gory, but I liked it back then. I've always liked street fights. I'm from Philly, Arthur. You know, we like fights. If we see a fight, we don't try to break it up. We want to let them go at it a little bit, and break it up before someone gets really hurt. But I loved watching fights. I was into boxing, and then UFC just seemed more pure to me. And I just like how pure it is. So I followed it. I watched it on, what was that, Spike TV for a while. They used to have it. And, you know, I've gotten suckered into ponying up a lot of money. I had Dana White on Waters World a couple months ago. And I said, man, I have opened my wallet so wide for you, Dana. Like, I just, every fight, I'm like, just take my money. Because they always pay off. You don't ever buy a UFC fight and it doesn't pay off. Sometimes recently these Conor McGregor fights haven't really lived up to the hype, but there's so many other fighters that I'm a sucker for it. I'll pay whatever it is. I just love it.
I had Dana on the show a month ago or 6 weeks ago, and it was the first time I'd ever interviewed him. I was absolutely blown away by the guy because A, to see what he's built from the ground up with that organization was just maniacal, but also B, how he powered through COVID and essentially created the must-see event for people who are stuck at home. And the way he approached it when everybody was telling him he was a fucking idiot is incredible. We talked all about it. So I want to talk to you about Dana and just seeing what he's built and your impressions of how impressive what he's done are.
Well, you're right. He helped people get out of that pandemic mentality. Once we heard that sports were back and, you know, live events, fights were back, I mean, that really got us out of that quarantine mindset. And that was important psychologically for the country, for guys, for people who'd been holed up or even who weren't holed up. It was important. And it showed that you could create an event, a public event, during a pandemic with the right protocols and have it come off safe and have people enjoy it. And that was something, and that was something he did that a lot of the media doubted him. So yep. A lot of the fake news media would come in and they'd criticize him and say this and that. And these weren't even fight fans. And he pulled it off perfectly and provided a roadmap for other events and other sports. And the guy's just a great success story. And he's humble too, Arthur. He was on my show and he was late. And my show's taped a lot of the time on the weekends. And, you know, if you're over an hour late or 2 hours late, you know, I don't have a studio. We might have to drop you. There's a small window to come in and do the hit. And there was a big emergency at the UFC. He wouldn't tell me what it was, as people were very discreet about it. But at the last second, he comes in and he's like sweating, he's getting ready. And the first thing he says to me, this guy's what? He's worth so much money and he's so famous and he's just the man, right? And he apologizes and he says, Jesse, I am so sorry. This is the first time in my entire career I've ever been late to an interview. And it's never going to happen again. And I'm profusely sorry. And that struck me. That a guy at that level would be apologizing to me for being late to an interview. And it's that kind of person, humble yet driven. And that's Dana White. He's humble, he's driven, and he respects people. He respects other people's time And that's what life's about. It's about respect. And he's got it. He's figured it out.
I fucking love the guy. We booked his interview the day before, and we were dealing with Lene over at the UFC, who handles all of his PR. And you figure with someone with Dana's schedule, it's probably you're booking a month out. She's like, can you have him on the show tomorrow? And literally responsive times came on to the minute. I'm like, this fucking guy, like you said, worth probably $800 million or whatever since they've gone public with Ari Emanuel. And it's like, how cool is that? But that also shows you why he's become what he's become. It's that almost blue collar mentality that's helped him build this organization.
And I find the blue collar mentality is one of the most successful ingredients in people that are high achievers. We talked about O'Reilly, that's the same type of background. Talk about Donald Trump, not really a blue collar guy, but gets the blue collar thing, has the blue collar work ethic. You talk to actors, you talk to athletes, especially come from very humble beginnings. It's really the work ethic and the drive to be on top, to be number one, where you're not given everything at an early age. And if you have that grind, that chip on your shoulder, that blue collar work ethic, it can really take you far in life. And some of these investment banks here in Manhattan where I work, they actually look for people like that. They don't want the elite Harvard guy that, you know, whose father is a hedge fund guy. They want the guy that really didn't have a lot growing up and is hungry. They're looking for hunger as an attribute for these young workers, because they know these guys are going to work 60-hour weeks, and they're going to kill it, and they're going to grind, and it's going to pay off. If you're in your 20s and your 30s and you grind, your 40s are going to be much more luxurious or comfortable, as they say.
Yeah, I mean, and this is obviously a different generation, but Wall Street was my favorite movie growing up. And there's just a great dynamic when you see Michael Douglas and Charlie Sheen, and Douglas is measuring him to see how far he can push him and whether Bud Fox, the character that Sheen plays, will rise to the occasion. And then obviously he's the son of a pilot, a blue collar pilot, a blue collar airplane technician. And you see Bud rise to the occasion, and Douglas really takes a liking to him because of that exact type of mentality. You're 100% correct.
And he ended up doing the right thing by the workers at the end of the movie. And that's what, I don't know, maybe that's more about finance, but it really is life about balancing. You know, we could all just be, you know, cutthroat, you know, vulture capitalists and just, you know, murder everybody in sight for the next cent. Or, you know, you try to create a balance, and that's what life is. It's trying to create a balance. So, you know, you do well, but you're also making sure other people do well too.
You're a lifelong Eagles fan, and obviously the NFL season is back upon us. What is your earliest Eagles memory and your favorite Eagles memory?
Well, I came up, you know, Randall Cunningham, Mike Quick, that crazy defense, Jerome Brown, Reggie White, all those guys. And Buddy Ryan was the coach. And I still think, you know, that, what was they called, the Fog Bowl against the Bears. That was the team that was going all the way. I cannot believe God put fog in that stadium and just killed our chances in the playoffs. But, you know, again, after that, we suffered as Eagles fans for many, many years after Randall Cunningham. McNabb had a nice run and then couldn't finish in the big one with T.O. But, you know, winning the Super Bowl, what was that? 2017, that was it for me, man. You know, if we could just that one alone, probably the best experience of my life as a fan of anything. Anybody knows anything about Philly sports, that was the pinnacle. I still think we have a good team this year. We have a young team, a little worried about the defense, but if the offense can stay healthy, I think Hurts is a quality guy. He's young. He's very gifted athletically, and I think we can make the playoffs. I don't think the Redskins or the Giants are looking too hot. So that'll be good for us. You know, I think it's the Cowboys are going to be the biggest threat out of the NFC East for us.
So one of the main reasons, Jesse, that I started this show was to talk to successful people across all genres about the habits and the mentality that helped them achieve their success. So my question for you is, what are the habits you incorporate in your own life that allow you to continue to elevate?
For about 20 years, I woke up at about anywhere between 4:45 and 6:30 in the morning and showered, hopped on a train, got into the city. And waking up early and getting in earlier than everybody else, that maybe that was my competitive spirit, but I just wanted to be in early because I had a lot to do. And so getting up early is, you know, you're ahead of the ball already for that. And just working your ass off. I worked really hard. I tried to out hustle everybody and doing what you love. You know, if you love what you do what you love. It's a cheesy line, but it worked for me. And I really love what I do. And it's something I'm good at because I love it. It doesn't feel like work half the time. So if you could put yourself in an industry that you enjoy, if you can get in early, wake up early, you know, work out early, get your workout in early, just try to eat healthy and stay focused on the goal, you know, and just keep climbing. Never be satisfied with where you are. You know, there's always the next, there's always bigger, there's always more, and just trying to just keep growing. Don't stop, stay active. Life's about action and movement. That's my secret.
Dude, thanks for a terrific conversation. The new book is called How I Saved the World, number one New York Times bestseller. Thanks for a great talk, Jesse.
Thanks, Arthur. Appreciate it. Go Eagles.
Take care, man. All right, folks, that was Fox News' superstar, Jesse Watters. Make sure to check out his new book, How I Saved the World. And of course, the 5 weekdays at 5 p.m. Eastern and Watters World Saturdays at 8 p.m. Eastern. Told you it was a loaded triple header. Thank you as always for listening and watching. We love doing this for you, and your support keeps us on the air. So make sure to follow us, subscribe, rate on social media. Endless Hustle on Twitter is at on Twitter, we are at @endless_hustle, on Instagram at @endlesshustlepod. Me personally, I'm at Arthur Cade on Twitter, at It's Me Arthur Cade on Instagram. We are back on Thursday with an incredible triple header. Steve-O, Ben Barnes, and Lauren Rahimaki are joining us for a great episode. We'll see y'all Thursday.